Episode 11 of By Our Own Hands. Francis traveled to Almore's court. Dermod was present when Francis stood before the chief. Francis began to plead his case. Great chief, you raid the New English, and they retaliate, attacking you and your people. This has continued for years. There will be no end to it unless you agree to a lasting peace, he said. Dermod listened to these words thoughtfully. He knew that his king had raided the New English many times. He also knew that his king had not carried out raids for some time. He knew why. My people have been slaughtered. Their lands have been stolen. I do not desire peace. I desire justice, Rory roared. Francis was silent. Rory stood and left the great hall. Dermod watched him leave and then approached Francis. My king does not wish to discuss this further. You are still his guest, and he offers you his hospitality. You must rest at his court until you are prepared to journey, Dermod said. I am most grateful, Francis said. Dermod looked about the great hall. All of the chiefs of the Seven Septs were present. He knew that his king would not negotiate terms with the English. He had known this for many years. He had remained loyal to Rory, but he had begun to doubt his king's approach. He knew that Rory would never have a change of heart unless he was overcome by the other chiefs. Rory loved each of them as one loves a brother. It would take all of them to convince him to alter his course. Dermod knew that terms of peace could not be made without convincing the other five chiefs who were all loyal to Almore. Dermod also knew that his king had planned an attack for many months. He wondered if Francis knew. He led Francis to his room. He turned to find that a young woman was following them. She was the most beautiful woman he had ever laid eyes on. She glanced at him and then diverted her eyes. They reached the room where Francis was to rest for the night. He motioned towards the young woman. She is my servant girl. She will need to board with your other servants, he said. Dermod gazed at her. He knew that the room adjoining Francis's room was vacant. He didn't hesitate. She will take the room next to yours, he said. Francis smiled and raised an eyebrow. Dermod motioned towards the door of the room that was to be hers. She walked towards the room and soon disappeared. Dermod led Francis into his room. He closed the door. The young lady is lovely, is she not? Francis asked, still smiling. Dermod smiled and nodded his agreement. Some servant girls will offer other services. She is not one of them. She is an honorable girl. She hails from one of the old English families that settled outside of the English Pale, one of the many English families that is now as much Gael as you. Her family lives in the mountains of Limerick at a place called Gilbally. Her family name is Cantwell. She has butler blood running through her veins, which makes her distant kin to your king, Francis said. Dermod nodded. He was surprised that Francis knew that Rory's mother was from the great butler family of Ormond. I understand. I have designs on her, but I can assure you that they are honorable, Dermod said. You will have to be able to offer her more than honorable designs. She has been courted by gentlemen that can offer her far more than you can, Francis said. Dermod blushed with shame. Francis stopped speaking at the sound of a knock on the door. She gently opened the door and entered the room. She walked towards the hearth and began to build a fire. Dermod watched her completely transfixed. She quickly started the fire and rose to leave. Thank you, Grania, Francis said. She smiled faintly and left the room. I know what is afoot, Francis said. Dermod turned to him but did not speak. I know. Do not ask me how, he continued. Diarmaid was still silent. Your king and all of the chiefs of Leash have made an alliance with the chiefs of Offaly. An attack is planned. It will happen soon. It will be carried out on the old English of the English Pale, he concluded. Diarmaid was stunned. Francis was correct. The plan had been in the works for months. He wondered how he could know such details. I learned of this recently. I have not spoken of this with anyone until now. The Lord Protector does not know. I will have to give the army of the English Pale some warning. I'm sure you understand. But I will not bring the full might of my people against you, he added. Why not? Diarmaid asked. I want your armies to attack the English Pale. I want my people to see that the very reason for the planting of your country has been for naught. Your people still possess enough strength to attack the English Pale. My people have only given your people more reasons to hate the English, he said. And when we raid the English Pale, Diarmaid began, my people will understand that peace will not be had by planting more English in Leash and Offaly. Peace will be had by making terms with those that have been dispossessed, he said, interrupting Diarmaid. My king wants justice, Diarmaid said. Your king must desire peace, Francis said. There are the ways of the Gaels and the ways of the English. We will never understand each other until we become each other. That is what Grania's family has done. They are English Gaels. Her people made peace with the Gaels by becoming Gaels. My people did not, and we still suffer raids, he added. Francis stared intently at Diarmaid before continuing. If you help me, I will see to it that you can offer Grania more than your honorable designs. Diarmaid looked away. Francis grabbed his arm. He stood close to Diarmaid and spoke in a whisper. Go with your king and raid my people. When the raid is done, convince the other chiefs that the time has come for terms of peace. Diarmaid did not answer him. When you return from the raid, I will be here waiting for you. I will help you. I will bring her with me, and she will become your bride, he added in an even fainter whisper. Diarmaid looked at the fire that was beginning to fade. He was silent for several moments before he looked directly into Francis's eyes and spoke. I will. I will convince them all. Francis and Grania left the following morning. 1 week later, Diarmaid traveled with his king and the other great chiefs of Leash. Their armies followed in small groups so that no one would detect a great movement of men was underway. They traveled north and met the men of Offaly before they all turned east towards the English Pale. Within a week, their armies were besieging the English Pale. They raided Kells. They crossed the River Boyne and raided Navan and then Trim. They marched to Kilcock on the River Liffey. They stole boats and built rafts. Then they sailed their great force to Dublin. Dublin held out for days, and then its walls were breached. The great army raided and pillaged for 3 days before they left. They returned triumphantly to their homes. As promised, Francis was waiting for Diarmaid in his humble home. He had brought a priest and Grania. Diarmaid and Grania were wed that night. Diarmaid took her to his king's court to present her. He brought Francis too. The court was celebrating its victorious campaign against the English when Diarmaid arrived with his new bride. He stood before his king and the entire court. May I present my new bride? He asked in a loud voice. Rory O'Moore smiled faintly at her. You are welcome to my court, he said. He then turned his gaze to Francis. His eyes rested on Francis for only a moment before he returned his gaze to Diarmaid. We are celebrating our victories, and you bring this man who wishes for us to beg for crumbs from the English?" he roared. "This man wishes for peace," Dermod said, motioning towards Francis. "The English will never give us peace until we cease to be Gaels. The English promised my family peace if we surrendered our lands to the English crown. We did, and our lands were regranted to us, but soon after, a law forbid any of my clan from possessing land. English promises are hollow, and English offers of peace are false. They only want to destroy all that is Gaelic," he roared. Francis stepped forward. "Great king, my people's king, Henry Tudor, made such promises and broke them. He was a fickle, bloody tyrant. His daughter, Queen Mary, shired your country. She did her father's bidding because she was a fool. But now his daughter, Queen Elizabeth, sits on the throne. She will keep her word. If you ask for terms of peace, she will give them to you, and she will keep those terms. She will see to it that they are kept," Francis said. "These great victories will be followed with retaliations. Our people will suffer and starve. This cycle will not cease until one of us is no more," Dermod shouted. He turned and looked about the court. "Who will be extinguished, the Gael or the Saxon?" Dermod asked in a booming voice before returning his gaze defiantly towards his king. "If we make terms with the English, we will be extinguished. They cannot abide the Gael in our ways. They will seek to destroy us with or without terms. We must never cease to fight them," Rory shouted. "The Gael and the English have made terms outside of the English pale. You are a product of that union of Gael and English, of O'More and Butler," Dermod shouted. "The English made terms because it was the only way the English could survive outside of the English pale. The time will come that the English will seek to destroy all Gaels, the new and the old, my father's kin and my mother's kin, your kin, Dorian, and that of your new bride. The time will come, and it will come soon," Rory said, lowering his voice. A stirring was heard throughout the court. Dermod turned to the chiefs of the Septs. "The English will bring their armies to retaliate. How many of your sons will perish? What will you bequeath to them? You have the chance to bequeath a legacy of peace. Make terms with the English now. If we make peace, the new English can, in time, become Butlers and Cantwells," Dermod said. The chief of the Olalors stood up. "I too desire peace," he shouted. The chief of the Odevoids followed. "I too," he shouted. The remaining chiefs joined in with shouts of approval. "This is a disgrace," Rory shouted. He got up and left the court. Dermod left the main hall with his bride. Francis followed him. When they were far removed from the main hall, Francis stopped them. "I am leaving tomorrow for Dublin. I am going to request an audience with the Lord Protector, Sir Henry Sidney. Prepare your king," Francis said. Dermod parted with his bride and made his way alone to his king. When he reached him, he was not permitted to speak with him. Dermod returned to his room. He tried every night, but Rory would not speak with him. Rory did not emerge from his private room for more than a week. When he did, he called all of the chiefs of Leash to his court. "We have all been asked to come to a conference of peace. It will be held in 2 months' time on New Year's Day. I know that even if I refuse, all of you will go. If I threaten each of you, I will be nothing more than a tyrant, so I will join my countrymen and try to make peace with the English. We must all agree on the terms, and only if our agreement is unanimous can we submit to their terms," Rory said. In 2 months' time, Rory led the procession out of his country to Mullamast, in the southern region of Kildare, where it borders Leash, Wicklow, and Carlow, They arrived and saw that the chiefs of Offaly had been invited too, as well as chiefs from other neighboring kingdoms. Nearly 400 were in attendance, including more than 40 chiefs, their wives, children, and warriors. 100 of those in attendance came from the great clan of the kings. To prove his solidarity with his people, Rory had brought his entire family and their extended kin. All of those that answered the call for peace arrived unarmed. The castle of Mullaghmast had a great hall that was twice as big as that of O'More's. All in attendance were seated at the long tables in the great hall. Sidney was seated at the front of the hall, at the place normally reserved for the chief. Next to him sat Francis. When Diarmaid entered with his king, Francis motioned for them to join him and Sidney. Their wives were permitted to join them too. The great hall was boisterous with talk and laughter. After everyone had been seated, Sidney rose from his seat. The hall fell silent. He calmly walked to the center of the hall. He looked about impassively at all that were present. He then walked slowly towards the door. He opened it and left. The guests exchanged looks of bemusement and confusion. Rory watched with unease. He grabbed Diarmaid by the arm and leaned in close to speak. Before he could speak, several armed soldiers entered the room. Two stood guard at the door. The others began attacking the guest with their swords. The hall filled with screams. Diarmaid watched as one of the soldiers grabbed two young girls and dragged them to the door. He watched as a child was torn from his father and cut down with one swipe of a sword. Francis stood and turned over the table at which they sat. He grabbed his chair and began to swing it at the table. One of the chair legs broke. Rory did the same. Soon both men had sharp, splintered sticks. Diarmaid looked at his king. Tears filled his eyes. Rory looked away. They made their way into the main hall. Rory hit one of the soldiers with his stick. The soldier fell and Rory grabbed his sword. Francis followed Rory and they began to fight their way towards the door. Rory had his wife and Grania by his side. Diarmaid followed them. One of the soldiers grabbed Francis. Francis tried to hit the soldier with his stick, but he lost his footing because he slipped. The floors were already drenched with blood. Francis was overcome. Diarmaid watched as the soldier dragged Francis away, but he did not kill him. Diarmaid struggled to reach the door. The screams of the dying were deafening. Grania clung to the back of Rory. Diarmaid struggled to reach her, and then suddenly he could not see her. He pushed his way forward. He watched as one of the O'Mores, a nephew of Rory, was cut down. The soldier that killed him eyed Diarmaid. Diarmaid struggled to get away from the soldier, but the soldier was quick and the door was still several feet away. Smoke had started to pour into the hall. Diarmaid's eyes watered. The soldier reached Diarmaid and tried to strike him. Diarmaid struggled to focus on the soldier. The soldier raised his sword and Diarmaid hit him with all of his might. The soldier fell back, but then Diarmaid lost his footing too. He looked down to see that he had tripped over the body of a young woman who had been stabbed through the chest. He turned around to see that the soldier that he had struck was fighting with one of the O'Lalors. Diarmaid turned quickly and ran for the door. He opened it and stepped into the cold air. As soon as he did, he was overcome with smoke and a stench of burning flesh. He heard screams, the most horrific screams he had ever heard in his life. He saw the two young girls he had seen earlier. They had been strapped to stakes and set alight. Several people had suffered the same fate. The soldiers that had not entered the hall were capturing and burning anyone that escaped. Diarmaid saw Rory fighting with one of the soldiers. His wife and Grania were with him. Rory killed the soldier. Dermod watched as he dragged the two women to a horse. He cut it loose and threw the two women onto the horse. He hit the horse and it soon disappeared. Dermod watched until he felt the blade pierce his chest. He saw the guard that had appeared at his side, and then his vision blurred. Dermod fell to the ground. The guard left Dermod for dead, but he was not dead. Dermod dragged himself away and found a tree to hide behind. He felt his chest bleed out. His breathing grew ragged. His mouth was dry. He wanted nothing more than a drink of water to ease his suffering as he waited to die. The screams finally subsided. After several hours, all was quiet. The English finally left. Dermod was very weak. He began to crawl towards a stream. He knew that his wound was not deep. If he could just reach the stream and quench his thirst, he might be able to think clearly enough to find a way to save himself. He clawed at the earth. He moved slowly, weakened by all that he had endured. His thirst was intense. As he crawled, he suddenly heard a noise. He looked in the direction of the noise and was amazed to see Rory approaching. "Help me," Dermod gasped. He could hear the stream. He could almost taste the water. "Please, my king, I need water," he whispered. Rory walked to Dermod and hit him with the blunt handle of his sword. Dermod was not killed immediately. He was found a few days later. Someone had dragged him to the stream, but he had never regained consciousness to take the drink of water that might have saved his life. The wound to his chest had not been fatal. He had not lost enough blood. The blow to his head had not been fatal. His skull had not been cracked. His parched lips made it clear what had brought about his death. He had died of thirst. Rory survived. He managed to save his wife and Grania. Francis Cosby survived too. Everyone else present on that terrible day was slaughtered. After the slaughter of Mullamast, Mary Dudley knew that she had married a demon. She also knew that she and everyone else had done nothing to stop him. She wrote to her sister queen, Elizabeth, in desperation. Elizabeth responded by asking Sidney to remain in Ireland. She asked him to continue his efforts to subdue the Gaels of Ireland. Dermod's body was brought to Grania. She buried him. She was with child. It was the only reason she was shown any mercy by the clans that had lost so many of their own. She knew that she could not stay in Leash. She made the decision to set out for her home in Galbally. The night before she was to leave, she was disturbed by a knock at her door. She opened the door and was surprised to see a man standing before her dressed in clothes that she knew would only be worn by the English. She began to shake. She was alone in her small cabin with no servants to assist her. She stared at him and saw compassion in his eyes. She stepped back and asked him to enter. He looked at her and spoke slowly in his native tongue. "Will you help me?" he asked. She nodded. "I have heard of the massacre. My people have been told that we will all need to go to the safety of Maryborough before the retaliations begin. We are to make a stand against your people," he said. She remained silent. "I want to leave, but I don't want to return to England," he continued. "I know where you can go," she said. "I want to remain in this land, but I don't want to take another's rightful land," he said. "I know," she said. "I am not alone," he said. "We will leave tomorrow at dawn," she said. He nodded his understanding. "Thank you. I know who you are. I know your husband wished for peace. I am Samson, Thomas Samson," he said. He left and returned the following day with 24 of his people. She knew where they could go. She knew where they could be English and in time Gaels just as her people had. They journeyed in the early hours of the morning. They traveled at a leash towards Munster's ancient royal site of Cashel. They camped in forests and mountain glens. It took several days before they reached Cashel. From Cashel, they journeyed into Tipperary's Golden Vale and crossed the Galty Mountains, finally reaching Galbally, the place of her birth. Once they reached Galbally, they did not stop. She took them further south, 5 miles south of where she had been born. She took them to a spot where she had often gone as a child. It was at the foot of the Galty Mountains. It was a spot of beauty that had not been claimed. When they reached the spot, she took Thomas Sampson aside and gestured to the land. "This is Buya land," she said. "I don't understand," he said. "Our people take their sheep and cattle into the mountains during the summer to graze. Then they return after a few months so that the harvest can be gathered. These common grazing lands are called Buya lands. The cabins you see are for the shepherds. They will return in the summer. You will need to have your homes built by that time. They will not disturb you as long as you do not disturb them," she said. She left them the following day. She journeyed to her people and learned that they were no more. Her family had moved further south during a hungry time and had been slaughtered by marauding English adventurers brought to Munster by Sidney and his queen. These adventurers were called the Twilight Lords because it was said that their arrival ushered in the twilight of Gaelic Ireland. This twilight was a death knell that rang throughout the land. By the time Sidney left for England, Munster had lost half of its population. Grania returned to the English settlement where she gave birth to her child. She married Thomas Sampson and bore several more children, but her first child took the name of his father and was named Diarmaid Dorian. The English settlement was called Anglesborough, the borough of the English. In time, it became a borough of Gaels. Rory was murdered by Sidney. He had been correct. The conquest of the Gael was nearly complete when Elizabeth breathed her last. Within 2 decades of her death, the last of the Gaels were subdued. Ireland learned that only those that ceased to be Irish could enjoy peace. All others would suffer. The Irish people lamented for centuries. Their sentiments were best expressed by Thomas More, a descendant of Rory's clan. "Already the curse is upon her, and strangers her valleys profane. They come to divide, to dishonor, and tyrants they long will remain. But onward the green banner rearing, go flesh every sword to the hilt. On our side is virtue and Erin, on theirs is the Saxon and guilt." Rory O'More claimed before his death that he had tried to save Diarmaid. He had returned to the place where he had dragged him. He found an old woman leaning over Diarmaid. She had looked at Rory and spoke to him. "We are all forsaken, but know this, great king, you have not failed." He left Diarmaid to her care and returned to his family.